Welcome to the Open Hearted Podcast. Hello and welcome to the Open Hearted Podcast. I'm your host, Will Wheeler, and today I'm not actually joined with my main man, Photon John. So unfortunately, he's away doing his, I'm pretty sure he's at band practice, getting an album all together, but we're here joined with our guest, Andrew McDonald. Andrew, what's going on, my man?
How are you, Will? I'm pretty good, yeah. How are you?
Yeah, can't complain. So for those of you who don't know, Andrew's from Ireland. What part of Ireland are you from, mate?
Kilkenny, about halfway between Dublin and Cork. Originally, you know, if there's any listeners or viewers in this part of the world, they'll notice a Welsh tinge to my accent. I'm originally from Wales.
Oh really? What was the what made you move to where you were at?
My wife now, my girlfriend then, is from this area, so it was kind of like I was living in Wales at the time. She was living in Ireland. It was a choice between one or other of us moving in which direction,
and yeah, cool.
I made the move.
Kilkenny, I'm pretty sure that's got a famous alcohol beer, am I right?
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what it's known for, right? Kilkenny beer or something, right?
Strangely, the Kilkenny beer, nobody in Kilkenny drinks it. it's viewed as a beer for tourists.
So, have you ever drank Foster's before?
Yeah.
That's known as an Australian beer, right?
Yeah.
Yeah, no one in Australia drinks that shit, mate. No Australian would be caught drinking that because it tastes like absolute crap, hey? But everyone thinks it's Australian. Yeah, totally. It's got that big name, but I can tell you right now, if you were to go into a pub anywhere here in Australia, you'd be lucky to get a Foster's. If you got a Foster's, it would probably be an English bar or something like that. You just don't drink that stuff here. And, you know, it's probably the same over there, all of that. But, you know, I suppose the big thing is we're not really here to talk about beer today. We're here to talk about some cool stuff about neurodiversity. Hey, sorry, before we do move on too, are you into, like, the rugby or anything like that?
Yeah, but more league than union.
Oh, you into league, really? Yeah. Oh, my God, because, like, league is huge here in Australia to say union. So, and Wales, that's strange for a Welsh person to be into league because I would have thought union's bigger in Wales than what league is.
Yeah, I mean, union is the national sport, really, of Wales. But I got into league more quite a while ago now, but I don't know if you feel the same, but union changed big time. Union, it used to be about trying to kind of avoid the tackle and run around the guy. Yeah. Now it's about smashing into the tackle. And I find that it slowed the game up a lot, whereas league is still quick.
See, I think that with union, it's a lot slower than league. Yeah, you know, it's stop, start, where, like, union is very stop, you know, couple of seconds, then it goes out, all of that. Sorry, who do you follow? So do you follow the Super League over in the UK?
Yeah, St. Helens.
Oh, you're a St. Helens fan. Good. A few Aussies go over there and play. Actually. Do you follow the NRL here in Australia?
Not as intensely, but Broncos is my team.
Ah, you're a Brisbane Broncos fan. Well, I'm a Broncos fan. I come from Brisbane, so you're a bit disappointed with the grand final, I'm assuming.
Yeah, it was tough, wasn't it?
It was a good game. I was actually at that game.
All right. Okay. Cool.
Yeah. Yeah. Cool. So it was hard. It was hard. But anyway. Anyway, we should move on because this isn't a podcast about league or football or anything. But today, what we're going to be covering is how to market your business as a neurodivergent entrepreneur. So let me just get this up here. So before we do start, I'll do a little bit of housekeeping. So anyone who's listening, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe, like, and follow to all of our social media platforms. You can check us out on TikTok, Facebook, Instagram, Twitter, which is now X, Twitch, YouTube, and LinkedIn. And please, if you have any questions during the podcast, please feel free to reach out to us, ask us some questions, share some of your opinions, just cool stuff like that. So first things first, Andrew, please share a little bit about yourself, a little bit about your journey so far.
Yeah, so I mean, I'm a copywriter, which means I write marketing materials and design marketing strategies for businesses. And I specialize in the field of neurodiversity, both from the perspective of working with neurodiverse entrepreneurs to help them grow their businesses with a focus on sustainability and building their businesses sustainably. And also with kind of general businesses, trying to help them make their marketing more neurodiverse friendly. Neurodiversity is a growing topic. It's a topic that people are getting more and more interested in, and there's a need to embrace kind of, I don't even know if they're new, but different marketing strategies, both from a neurodiverse standpoint, but also for kind of advertising and marketing to people who have neurodiversity.
Awesome. Sorry, man, I just needed a bit of drink of water there. It's quite hot here in Australia today. But yeah, it's true. You know, I think, I go to a lot of events where they're talking about neurodiversity a lot. They're talking about, and I'm talking like corporate events, and they're talking about how they embrace neurodiversity, how they're all this and that. But then you go onto their website, you look at their marketing material. It's, you know, for one, there are some of these companies are multi-billion dollar companies. Yeah. And, you know, they don't even have assistive technology, but they call themselves inclusive, you know. And I think a big thing is what a lot of people say is that, and this is the thing, when I see people talking about that, the first thing I always do is go straight to a company's website and look at little things like that. And if they don't have these little things, really, they're not inclusive, because if they're not inclusive of their customers, how are they inclusive of the people who work for them as well?
Yeah. Yeah.
You know? Exactly.
And I mean, cool. People think that I think people are kind of sometimes overwhelmed by not knowing where to start in terms of making the material more neurodiverse friendly. But even small little things can make a big difference. You know, even if you go for something as simple as a font, using a font that's easily readable by somebody who has dyslexia makes a big difference. You know, using, for example, dark text on a light background makes a big difference. Not going for a complete contrast, not going for that black on white, but a dark color. So, for example, a dark blue on cream.
Or even like a gray with dark writing. Do you know what I mean? Like a light gray with like, you know, dark writing type of. It's really interesting. So with Neurodiversity Academy, my company, we're actually we've pivoted a lot in what we're doing. We're about to launch a whole bunch of new stuff. We've gone into developing a new logo, all of that. So we've got some big stuff happening. So everyone listening, got some big things happening in the future there, right? But we're actually talking to our UX UI designers on a lot of stuff, right? And it's been interesting because I've been sitting down with them and they've been going over certain things with us. And we were having a talk about the fonts and all of that type of stuff in regards to developing and designing the website. And it was really interesting because we were talking about headings, all that. And then the designer's like, okay, so what I want, what we recommend is this type of font afterwards. And the font, what it was, and I don't know the name of the font, but it was that very, it's that type of font that's very got the, you know, the little N parts onto it that can be very difficult for dyslexic people to read. Do you, I'm not 100% sure what it is. But I was looking at it and I'm sitting there and they're like, we recommend this. And I'm like, hold up. I said, for starters, I said, we're a neurodiversity company. Our clients are going to be this. I said, we can't use this font. And they're like, oh, but this is what I was taught at school. And I said, that's cool if you were taught that at school, like college or university, whatever it, right? I said, that's fine. But what you weren't taught is that this is what helps neurodivergent people. Normal, everyday people, this helps. But this isn't going to help neurodivergent people. Mm-hmm. If we put that up on our website, everyone's going to laugh at me and say, I don't know what the hell I'm talking about. Do you know what I mean? So I suppose there's this lack of education in regards to that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And that's what I'm saying is that I do think that people get overwhelmed because they think that they kind of overcomplicated in their own heads. Mm. Whereas even, as I said, little simple things like that make a huge difference. Mm. And that's before we get on to, you know, different technologies and so on. Mm. There's lots of different things that you can do that really are minimal effort that make a big difference for neurodiverse people.
Yeah, and I think that's the key thing to really get across, right? When I first started really pushing stuff in, you know, when I first got into neurodiversity going back 10 years ago, if not earlier, you know, there was this big thing. I remember going to a lot of events and there would be architects getting up talking about neurodiversity and how you need to have these types of lights and you need to change the workplace to be like this. And these changes were going to cost thousands, if not millions of dollars to implement, right? And I'm sitting there thinking, oh, my God, you know, this is making it really difficult for my cause because everyone's thinking, man, I need to spend millions to be able to make my workplace inclusive of neurodivergent people, if that makes sense, where really we can probably be adding a lot of other things that can create a lot more value at a really cost-effective price, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. I mean, absolutely. Yeah, totally. I think it's really important, and I think that I don't want to comment too much on that kind of attitude of change the lighting, change the structure of the office, and so on. But I don't know how much of that helped. I don't know how much of it helps because, as you said, it's very, very, very costly. And when you're looking to encourage businesses to make changes, you want to do it sort of incrementally. You want to do it at a level that they feel comfortable with, that they feel that there is a purpose to. And the flip side of that is also to remember that, like, something up to about 20% of the population and neurodiverse in some way.
Mm.
So whilst you're also looking at the cost side of things, you need to be looking at that element. Our business is marketing, advertising as effectively as they possibly could to that 20% of the population. And 20% of the population is a lot of money.
Yeah, totally. And, you know, it's interesting because that 20% goes into so many other different things as well. Mm-hmm. It's like almost like I do a lot of work within adult education, right? And, you know, I do a lot of talks on this stuff, and it's like, okay, this 20% are currently quitting because they're not getting the support that they require. They are having bad experiences. They're giving bad reviews. And it's like, that's money. That's billions of dollars that these sectors are potentially turning a blind eye to because, one, I think that, and I don't think, pardon me, I don't think it's that people want to are purposely going out to do this. I think it's like they just don't know how, and it's like there's money right there.
Yeah, yeah.
If you want to go for those markets, if that makes sense, there's lots of money there because if you can compensate for these people, if that's the right word I'm looking for, there can be some really good opportunities there as well.
And that I start in some respects, I feel kind of in some regards uncomfortable talking about people as money, but ultimately that's what businesses care about.
At the end of the day, that's what it is. You know? And do you know what, right? Like, this is where myself as a business as well, I want to help people, right? But at the end of the day, I can't help people if I'm not getting paid for it. My time is valuable. I can't, there has to be some type of, but the way I look at it is how can I find the money, because personally, at the end of the day, I don't want to charge neurodivergent people for my services. I want to find other ways to be able to make money, but it's got to be in a way that people are seeing value as well. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because I can tell you right now, corporate, for example, aren't going to spend money if there isn't something in it for them. Do you know what I mean? They're not just going to do it for the sake of doing it, if that makes sense.
And to be honest with you, Will, it's not just corporate.
It's worldwide, you know.
You know, even like a small business owner who is kind of in a, I don't want to get away from the fact that corporate is very aware of their bottom line, are very aware of the kind of profit that they're making. But a small business owner who is extremely conscious that if he doesn't make this amount of money each month, his business doesn't exist. Again, you know, that's the world that we live in. It'd be fantastic if we could remove. It'd be fantastic if we could remove money and all just help each other for the good of it.
It'd be a very different world, I can tell you.
That isn't the world that we live in.
No, it's not. It's not. Yeah. It's just not. It's just not. You know, I hear a lot about a lot of people are starting to talk about like universal income. Do you know what universal income is, right? So for our listeners who might not know what universal income is, it's like, so for example, we're seeing a lot of stuff is starting to become automated. So a lot of people are being put out of work, and it's sort of like, well, what are these people going to be able to do if you're not able to drive a truck or a taxi or something? Because it's a lot of blue-collar workers who are actually being put out of work, right? And, you know, there's a lot of talk about bringing in universal income. But you know what I often heard is I think if I was in that category, I would probably still want to be trying to make more money anyway rather than just get a paycheck every week, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, sorry.
Go on, sorry.
No, you're right. You go.
Universal Basic Income. They've trialed it in a couple of countries in Europe. Finland was one.
Yeah, I think Finland. Belgium
may have been another. And the rollout of it has, to my understanding, has been successful. Now, it is, to a certain extent, a controversial topic. But what are we going to do in the future when all of these jobs become automated?
And you know what? There's probably a lot of neurodivergent people who are going to be affected by that. Mm-hmm. Do you know what I mean? Because that's what a lot... Not all neurodivergent people, but there's a lot of neurodivergent people in those types of jobs, you know. So it's interesting. It's interesting. But, you know, moving on from that, what are some of the challenges neurodivergent individuals face when marketing their business? So getting back to, you know, people owning their business and all that, but what are some of those challenges neurodivergent individuals face when marketing their business?
Yeah, I mean, it's a challenging question in a sense, because neurodiversity is so broad that there's different people with different neurodiversities face different challenges. I kind of try and avoid putting neurodiverse people into a box, because it sends a message of, you can't do this, so you have to do this. No, it's not true. Mm. Some of the most obvious ones are a lot of neurodiverse people, but far from all, struggle with energy levels. You know, their energy levels can be very up, can be very down.
And you know what, I think, and look, I totally agree with that. You know, mental health, there's a lot of things that come into play with a lot of neurodivergent people. I think for myself, when I first started out in entrepreneurship or that, I was trying to do a lot of things on my own. You know, so I think for myself, partnering with other people has been a real benefit. But these are some of the lessons you need to learn, and that's entrepreneurship right there, if that makes sense.
Yeah. I mean, like, it's like, for example, myself with my own neurodiversities, one thing that I struggle big time with is rejection sensitive dysphoria, which is when you actually feel kind of like physical pain.
Yeah, it's, and I think especially with entrepreneurship, rejection's probably the biggest one. You're constantly getting, you know, I like to think of it as like you're constantly hitting a wall and you're getting knocked down. It's like constant. It's constant. And, you know, I think for myself, you know, I've learned a lot now about that's the game. You know, and it's almost like, you know, a muscle. You work on that muscle, it gets bigger and stronger.
Yeah.
And, you know, don't get me wrong, there's still times where I've suffered from RSD, but, you know, over time I've been able to read what that is. You know, I think a big thing for a lot of entrepreneurs, young entrepreneurs who haven't really experienced a lot of things in business, is you might connect with someone who you're like, man, this person is awesome, you know what I mean? But then it may not turn out the way you originally thought was. You know what I mean? And I even speak to a lot of, like, my business partners and that now, and I'm like, look, we're having a meeting with this person. They're like, oh, my God, we should do this and that. I'm like, let's just hang on a bit, because I said, how we're probably envisioning it in our head right now is probably not how it's going to turn out in the long run. You know what I mean? And that's years of rejection, if that makes sense, and being able to deal with that, which has been hard.
Yeah. And it's so the challenge is like are kind of very, very wide, depending on the reason that somebody is neurodiverse, you know, and I don't want to get away from, like, for, I'll give you an example. I find cold emailing extremely difficult. It really triggers my RSD, but I don't want to get into the sort of, into a box of saying that that means that non-neurodiverse people should use cold email. No, there's neurodiverse people out there that are using cold email and are using it very successfully. You know, what I kind of try to, the message I try to give is you do need some kind of, you do need some level of resilience. But if you are finding that some kind of technique, some way of trying to build your business, grow your business, is really badly triggering you in some regards, look for an alternative. What I kind of try and get away from is a lot of the gurus and experts that are out there try to teach that there's this one thing that if you do this, if you follow me, if you buy my thing and you use it, then you will be successful. And that isn't true. A challenge for a neurodiverse entrepreneur, I think, is the flexibility to realize that if something is very triggering for you, if you're finding something so difficult that it's overcoming your resilience, then you need to start looking at alternatives. And I think that's the kind of, I think that's the best way of looking at things, rather than getting into these people might have this challenge and that those people might have this, because you could write a book on the challenges that come with being a neurodiverse entrepreneur.
Can I just say on that, like, you know, for me, I think, like, I do a lot of cold, like, emailing these days, but I would, compared to, say, when I first got into business, say, 7 years ago or whatever, right, I have a lot easier time of being able to connect with people. Reason being, I've been able to build my brand up. I'm reputable. People know who I am. And I've got things to show for that, if that makes sense. So it's a lot easier for me to, say, organize a meeting with someone, where back in the day I would reach out to people and no way would they want to talk to me. And it's really funny. Now a lot of the people who I used to reach out to, they're actually reaching out to me. They didn't even want to borrow me back in the day, but now, so, you know, I think, but for me, that's been a lot of going out and networking, going to events and sharing things, all of those things. So I think I've had to sort of approach it a little bit differently and almost prove myself. And now I'm starting to get that recognition, as the person they want to talk to, if that makes sense.
Yes. Yeah, absolutely. I think it's very, very true. But I mean, like, if you just say, for example, my sphere, copywriting, if you really struggle with networking, if you really struggle with cold emailing, you know, if that kind of meeting people is, I don't mean something that you can't be resilient about and kind of push through on, because there's always a pain in growth. If you're running away from pain all the time, you'll never grow.
But it's almost like you've got to step outside. You know, I think the pain is in that uncomfortable zone. And, you know, that you've got your comfort zone, then you've got outside of that comfort zone, which is where the pain can actually be. But sometimes you have to experience that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. But if you, if it's something that you literally cannot, it's too much for you. It's too much, and it's always going to be too much.
Mm.
This is what I'm talking about with flexibility. That doesn't mean that you can't be a copywriter. It might mean that you need to look at something like affiliate marketing. You know, it's there are opportunities out there, and I think that sometimes it's very easy to get into sort of shiny thing syndrome where you believe the gurus and experts that are telling you this one thing will work for you.
Can I just say on that, right, especially when talking about neurodiversity, you know, I just shared my way of doing things, right? But that's my way of doing things. Yeah. And when we're talking with neurodivergent people, sometimes those people need to almost work out. I think I could give people my opinion, but sometimes we need to identify what works best for us to be able to succeed, if that makes sense. Because I know Photon John, for example, my co-host, he probably wouldn't approach things in the way I do. You know, he's autistic, he's ADHD. I just know he wouldn't approach things my way. But that's not to say that the way he does things isn't successful. It's successful for him. But for me, I have different methods, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. Absolutely.
You know? And he's figured that out. You know, he connects with a lot of people, he does a lot of stuff. And that works well for him, you know?
Yeah, and it's exactly the same for me. Like, I mean, a big part of my...
Sorry, I think there's a lot of crackling going on from your headphones there.
Okay.
I can hear a lot of crackling. I don't think it's from me. I think it might be from your side of things.
Can you hear me okay now?
I can hear you, but I think sometimes... So play with your... Can you play with your things? Yeah, right there. I can hear, like, crackling and stuff like that. So, yeah, we might just need to be a bit careful there. Sorry, brother. Just so I give you a heads up on that. But, yeah, sorry, you were saying?
Yeah, and again, it's the same for me. It's... I use different strategies to you. Mm-hmm. In some ways, I use similar strategies because I do. You obviously do podcast hosting. I do quite a bit of podcast guesting, and LinkedIn is a good resource for me for networking with people. Mm-hmm. And I kind of like that slow build of getting to know people before suggesting that I might be able to help them, for example.
Yeah, I like to be able to check out a person. I know that might sound really strange, but, you know, you sort of want to, and you know what, I think a big thing as well is I'm a bit, and this might sound funny, but I even look at people's connections. Do you know what I mean? So, for example, I'm speaking at a conference next week up on the Gold Coast, and I'm looking at LinkedIn at a lot of people who are going to be attending that conference, right? Because they've set up this app where you can connect with people and all this stuff, right? Which is actually, I find that's good because I love being able to connect with people before I go to an event.
Yep.
So I can go into the event and actually know people. It's not like that whole cold calling of going to an event and starting conversation. I already know the person. Mm-hmm. But I see with a lot of people on LinkedIn, I see that they're connected with certain people, and I'm like, oh, those people are a bit dodgy. I hope these people aren't the same. Because a lot of the time I've found when people are sort of connected with other people in similar industries who may not be the most – not friendly, but they do some dodgy things. They've turned out to be quite dodgy as well. Yeah. That's my observation anyway, you know, so I'm very big at looking at those types of things. I like that slow build. You know, I know people all over the world who I've never actually met in real life, if that makes sense.
Yeah.
You know, yeah, it's funny how it works.
Yeah, absolutely the same. It's it's amazing how social media, the internet, has sort of made the world an even smaller place than it already was. Like, I mean, you're in Australia, I'm in Ireland. Geographically, we couldn't really be any further apart.
Yeah, totally. Anyway, let's move on to what we're to the next part here. So what situations can those challenges create for neurodivergent people? So like we spoke about before, you know, we need to do things a little bit differently. We can't be sort of told, hey, look, this is a one-size-fits-all type of thing.
Yeah, yeah.
What situations can these challenges create for these neurodivergent entrepreneurs?
Yeah. Again, I want to kind of preface this by saying not all. But I find a lot of neurodiverse people, myself included, are prone to thinking very badly about ourselves. You know, are prone to taking on the self-description of, for example, being a failure, not being good enough. And if we look at the reasons for that without getting too deep into it, a lot of neurodiverse people throughout their early life, even throughout adult life, have been made to feel that we don't fit in, have been made to feel different, have been made to feel bad about ourselves. By teachers, by peers in school, by other adults, colleagues, even friends sometimes. And that's where I kind of try and get people away from the gurus and experts message, because their message very much is, my thing will make you successful, and if it doesn't, you're the problem. And it isn't true. It actually takes you away from the opportunities that are there if you kind of embrace flexibility. I'm not saying that the things that the gurus and experts sell don't ever work. Sometimes they do, but they ain't a one size fits all. They ain't a magic potion. There ain't no silver bullet in building your own business.
Can I just say, like, I was actually speaking about this the other day to someone, and like, you know, when you see these people, like, you know, if you sign up to my program, I will make you a millionaire, or I'll make you very successful within a year. And you see people buy that type of stuff because they're very good salespeople, so they're very good at selling stuff. But, you know, the thing to become successful is hard work. You know, doing some program or something like that, it's not going to make you rich. You've got to put in the hard yards.
Yeah, yeah.
You know, and that's what's going to make you get there.
Yeah. And the copywriting world is rife with it. You know, this makes six figures in 6 months. And I know from my own personal experience, kind of at the start, I believed that. I thought that it was true. And it left me very ill as I was kind of moving towards that 6 month and beyond. Because my self-esteem just absolutely crashed. I thought that I was the problem rather than the way that these programs had been sold. And you're absolutely right. I mean, you'll make $1 million in 12 months. It ain't going to happen. You know, if that's your dream, you're almost better off buying a lottery ticket.
I can tell you right now, the person who's going to make $1 million is the guy selling it.
Yeah, yeah.
You know what I mean? That bloke is going to, or person is going to make the $1 million, not you.
Yeah,
you
know? It's the gold rush. It's the people who made money in the gold rush were the people who sold stuff to the people who were going looking for gold.
Mm.
Like, if you look at that historical period in American history where there was the gold rush and people were going everywhere in the search of gold, it was the people who set up shops selling spades and forks and hammers, and those were the people that made money.
That's a really good point. That's heaps interesting. So, you know, we've spoken about some of the challenges, all of that. Now, what's your advice on tackling these challenges? What do you reckon people could do to, and you've sort of explained a few, but what could we do to make this a lot easier for neurodivergent entrepreneurs?
Yeah, it's that flexibility, I think. It's that kind of open-mindedness about searching for solutions that work for you. And what I do when I work with people, for example, is I don't give them a prescriptive approach. Mm. I sit down with them. I look at what's working for them, what's not working for them, what they enjoy doing, what they really hate doing. And we try to build a marketing system around that information. And for example, Will, you could come to me and we could look at that. We could put all that down on a sheet of paper or whatever, and it could look very different to what Photon John tells me. And therefore, the marketing strategies, the marketing campaigns that we build would look very different to the ones that Photon John and I would build. And I think, it goes back to that flexibility. I don't want to discount resilience, because I think that it's fundamental. Whatever strategy you use is going to feel uncomfortable at the start. You know, it's a fact. When you rode a bike for the first time, you fell off. We all did, but we all got there in the end.
Yeah, you know what? Sorry to cut you off there, but you know, I think the biggest thing when I first started was, you know, it's like, where do I start? Mm-hmm. And it's like, just start. You know what I mean? And you can't. There isn't really a book on it, right? You just have to start, and you do. It's like you said, riding the bike, right? You don't ride a bike by reading a book or doing a course what someone wrote. You get on that bike, you start riding it, you start making mistakes, and you learn from those mistakes.
Yeah.
And then eventually you'll get that in the end, if that makes sense.
Yeah, absolutely. And it's true. But there does come a point where resilience doesn't cut it. And if you're feeling ill, if you're feeling completely overwhelmed, if you're feeling that there's kind of like no way forward, then it's time to look and investigate other strategies, other techniques that you can use.
I think a big thing is pivoting. You know, I think for us as a business too, we've gotten to a point now where we're like, okay, this was what we wanted to do. It hasn't really worked. We have tried it, hasn't worked. Let's change it to this here. And we're starting to get progress there, if that makes sense. You've got to be open to change. And, you know, maybe that is a bit of a hard pill to swallow, but that's what you have to be open to.
Mm-hmm. Yeah, absolutely. 100%. And it really is. I know I've said this word a few times now, but it really does boil down to flexibility.
Mm-hmm.
It boils down to being open to trying different approaches, you know, and finding what works for you.
Totally. And can I also say feedback is huge? I think reaching out with ideas, yeah, cool. And you know what? I think a big thing too, especially as a neurodivergent entrepreneur, some of our ideas can be very out there. Don't get Don't get like disengaged with something you're trying to work towards if someone else doesn't understand it. Because I'm, you know, from what I've learned is that people don't understand our way of thinking, and our way of thinking can be very innovative. And if we sort of listen to people and go, well, okay, well, I can't do that, I'm not going to do it then, where we may have this brilliant idea, that's where that key innovation could be missed. So sometimes listen to people, ask for feedback, but take that feedback on. Don't necessarily take it and run with it, if that makes sense. Just, you know, I listen to people, but sometimes I think, no, that just doesn't fit with me. I feel we could do this instead, if that makes sense.
Yeah, for sure. And it's, I mean, one strategy that I do help people with, and I am a big fan of, is building a mailing list. There's a few reasons for that. First of all, I think that any business, neurodivergent or neurotypical, that doesn't have a mailing list is missing out big time, because it's a place to capture your own audience. It's a place to capture people that are interested in you. Go on, sorry.
Yeah, sorry. Love the topic, actually, because this is something on my mind and I just wanted to say something. Is there certain ways that you can build mailing lists legally? Because, say, for example, I get a lot of people who add me to their mailing list and I haven't even asked to be added to that mailing list. Do you know what I mean? Out of curiosity, and I don't know if you want to share this, but is there a way to be building mailing lists properly, or should people be at, should I just be adding people to mailing lists?
No.
That's what I thought.
You can end up in, I'm not going to say it doesn't go on. It goes on a lot. It goes on far more than it should. But you can end up in all sorts of data protection troubled waters if you do what you've just described. And also, Will, what I'd say is, how effective is that? If you're suddenly starting to get an email from somebody that you've never shown an interest in, you know, I mean, you could argue that it potentially can be effective, because cold emailing is landing in somebody's inbox without being asked to do so. But for two things. First of all, with that, you are typically landing in somebody's business inbox, which is very different to their personal inbox.
Certainly.
And secondly, with cold email, any kind of cold email strategy, you need to personalize the cold emails that you're sending out. If you're blasting out to an email list, there ain't a lot of personalization going on. It might be the person's first name, could be their first name and surname, but no. It's not going to be personalized. The way that you do it is, effectively, you make it voluntary. Build and you be explicit about what they're signing up for. So you build a lead magnet. You build something that is valuable to a person, that they're willing to give you their email address in return for. Can be a webinar, can be a guide, can be a discount. It can be some kind of free service. Free consultation. There's lots and lots of different things that it can be, but something that is valuable enough for them to give them to give you their email address for. You need to build what's called a squeeze page. Many people outside of copywriting and marketing might know it as a landing page, a page on a website where they go, they put in, they enter their email address, and they receive that lead magnet. Okay.
Yeah.
But it's explicit on that page that by requesting the lead magnet, you're signing up to Will Wheeler's mailing list. Then you have a double confirmation. So you have a confirmation box on the web page itself. But before they get the lead magnet, so I go onto your website, I put in my email address. The lead magnet isn't the first thing that comes. What comes is a confirmation email that I have to click to confirm that I want to sign up. And then I get the lead magnet. And that is giving my consent twice to you adding me to your mailing list. And that's perfectly legal.
Yeah, and I think as well, too, you're probably getting someone who is interested in your stuff. You know that they're 100% interested because especially myself, I'm getting people messaging me, which ticks me off. I don't do business with them, by the way, because I'm pissed off. Do you know what I mean? I had some idiot send me a video about how they were showing a website and all this type of stuff. And I'm just like, there is no way I'm going to deal with you because I feel, okay, you've gone to the effort to make this video, but that's pissed me off because, one, you haven't asked me for this. You're trying to sell crap to me. I'm not interested. Do you know what I mean? That's what pisses me off. Do you know what I mean?
Yeah. And I mean, a lot of people that are doing, like, let's be honest, if they're just randomly adding you to a mailing list, they're using shady practices anyway.
Well, I don't know how the hell they got my email address. Yeah. And I've actually spoken to some of these people on phones before. And I said, how did you get my email address? And they're like, oh, we got it from this list. I'm thinking, where the hell did the list come from? Do you know what I mean? I would never just get a list of people and just start randomly reaching out to them. You know, I just don't see that as practical.
No, I mean, what I would say is that if you're using cold email, you might use that kind of a strategy of reaching out to people, but the emails that you send are very personalized. You know, it makes it you have to make it obvious that you're not sending out a template. The other thing as well is a lot of people that are just buying these lists and are adding it to their mailing list and blasting it out, they're not doing things strategically. They're not doing things. They're very often trying to sell you something, i.e. trying to get you to buy something rather than trying to get you to take the next step. As you know, you referenced it earlier on in this chat. When you are cold emailing, you're trying to set up meetings. You're not trying to sell people on your products or services. You're trying to sell them, but you're trying to sell them on the next step.
To tell you the truth, a lot of the meetings I'm trying to tee up are to build relationships. It's not even to sell them anything. It's more to go, hey, I really love to talk to this person because they're involved with this. It might be good just to have a chat with them. Do you know what I mean? For future, because I'm looking at future partnerships and stuff like that, if that makes sense.
Yeah. And I mean, it's like, there is a shady way, even if you're building your mailing list legitimately, there's a shady way of using it, which is very ineffective. And there's a genuine way of using it. If you're building a mailing list literally to sell out sales stuff all the time, then it ain't gonna work. People are gonna get, as you said, that your experience was ending up on these lists. People are gonna get pissed off because they've signed up, and all you're sending them is buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this, buy this.
Not the way to do business. Totally. The
best way of using a mailing list is by offering value. So you help people, you give free advice, you give free guidance, you sprinkle a little bit of product or service promotion into those emails. Not every email, but when it feels natural. And so you become a reliable person to go to.
Totally.
You become top of mind when they actually do want to buy. And going back to neurodiversity for a moment, as I said, I think it's a really important strategy for every business to have. But for neurodiversity, if we look at some of those challenges that we spoke about earlier, if you're struggling with fluctuating energy levels, a mailing list is a godsend. Because you can write your email when you're feeling good and energetic and have it ready to send when you know that you're not going to be...
Just be careful with that microphone, mate. It's all good. You're just getting a bit excited. That's good, man. That's good. Hey, moving on from that, because we've got a few more questions and we're just a bit pushed for time. So what strengths do you think neurodivergent entrepreneurs should lean into, do you think?
Yeah.
And that's a big question, to tell you the truth.
It is a big question. And if it's okay, I'll touch on one aspect as an example. Sorry.
Can I just say your microphone is still making like this? It's like glowing. It sounds like there's something going on there. Yeah, now it's stopped. Now it's stopped.
Okay.
Yeah, now it's come back again there.
I don't know.
Yeah, I don't know what's going on there. It might not be a really good quality. Sorry to dish your earpiece there, man. It might not be a good quality. Are you able to unplug it maybe and we can just talk without it?
Yeah, but can you get echo then?
Sorry, can you... I'm still hearing that noise, eh? Have you unplugged Yeah, there we go. Perfect. Perfect. I can't hear your voice now. Yeah, we might need to plug it back in then, eh?
Now?
Yeah, I can hear you okay now, yeah.
Yeah, okay. No, I don't know. It's strange. The microphone should be all right because it's... blue snowball, so it's
okay.
It's not top of the range, but it's not bad either.
All good. We've only got a little bit more to go, so all good, man. So what are some strengths you think neurodivergent entrepreneurs could lean into?
I'll give an example rather than kind of trying to talk about all of them, because if I talk about all of them, it's going to become too wide. One thing that I see as a consistent strength in the neurodivergent community is I think that we are on the cusp. I'm not saying it's going to happen in the next couple of months or even the next year or so, but I do think that we are moving towards more genuine marketing and advertising strategies and methods. People are starting to get sick of this shiny object syndrome stuff. People are starting to get sick of false scarcity. And what I mean by that is things like buy now before the price goes up. You know, people are starting to see through that. It's been done to death. And certainly from networking within the neurodivergent community, I know so many neurodivergent entrepreneurs that are pissed off with that kind of stuff and don't want to do it themselves. It's almost like we have an increased sensitivity to it. And I think that that is an example. As I said, we could write a book on all the strengths that neurodivergent people have. But that is one example of a strength, that we have a sensitivity to what is kind of like old hat marketing and advertising strategies. And we want to do something different. And I do think that the general world is moving in that direction anyway. And we have a the opportunity to kind of be at the head of that, to lead that.
No. That's heaps cool. So wrapping it up, just out of curiosity, is there much support for neurodivergent entrepreneurs in Ireland? Is there places that people can go to? What are your thoughts on that?
I mean, shameless plug here, they can come to me.
Yeah, nice. That's what you're here for, my man.
But yeah, I mean, there are some charities doing good work in Ireland, in the neurodiversity sphere. The best one that I see is actually based in the UK, called Neurodiversity in Business. And they are really active in trying to get businesses in kind of like in all our avenues to embrace neurodiversity. They're really active, and they're really active on LinkedIn. I'm not pushing this as an affiliate. Like I'm not an affiliate of them or anything. But I do see them doing an awful lot of good work. Whereas in Ireland, look, Ireland is a small country. So things do tend to move at a slower pace here. And things do tend to be less active than in other parts of the world. That isn't a criticism. It's just the reality of living in a small country. So there are charities out there doing good work, but it tends to be smaller scale.
Yeah. Crazy. Awesome, man. Like you said before, if people want to connect with you, where would be the best place to probably find you?
Yeah, my website is www.andrewmcdonald.biz, mcdonald.biz. Yeah, and sure. I also have a lead magnet, like we talked about before, on there that you can find by going to the book page of that website. It's about building a marketing campaign as a neurodivergent entrepreneur.
Yeah.
But it is suggestive rather than prescriptive. I think you'll find a lot of good information in there. But what I say with neurodiversity and entrepreneurship is never treat anything like a prescription. Treat it as a suggestion. Treat it as something that might be useful for you, might be helpful for you.
Cool. Well, thank you so much for coming on the podcast today. It's been so good to have you come on board, really listen to a lot of your insights there. So, Andrew, thank you so much for coming on the show today. We really appreciate it.
Thanks very much, Will. Thanks for having me.
Not a problem, man. For anyone listening, if you haven't already done so, please subscribe, like, and follow to all of our social media platforms. And if you haven't done so, please subscribe to our website, openheartedsociety.com. My name's Will Wheeler, and this is the Open Hearted Society podcast. Till next time.